tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabe. Anabe is the only machine washable sofa inside and out where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some useful nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, no matter how contrary that might seem, just like this nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I'm delighted as ever that you've joined me today. We'll hear from a fantastic guest, Ash Beckham, later as we talk about the closets that we all hide in and how to come out of them. It's all about navigating life in an authentic way, about being real, which kind of ties in with some thoughts I had when I was out walking the other day.
I'm just walking along a path right down the middle of two fields. And on the one side, the last time I walked down here, there was a whole field of brassicas, which has been harvested now. And on the other side was this beautiful field of barley. I don't know about you, but I love seeing a field of barley. There's something so elegant and beautiful about the way barley grows with its lovely whiskers and its head of the seeds bowed and blowing in the wind. We've got a little bit of wind here today. And it got me thinking about seasons, because a couple of weeks ago when I walked down here, the barley was still quite green. And now it's getting to this beautiful golden colour. And I wouldn't be surprised if the next time I walk down here, it will have been harvested as well. And, you know, it's all about this natural alchemy, transformation. The seeds grow, they mature. There's a season for everything. And then, you know, we harvest the seeds and we reap the benefits, literally. And our lives are a bit like that. That's what alchemy is. It's about transformation, about growing, about becoming all that we are, and coming to fruition, literally, so that we can be what it is that we're here to be and therefore do. And it's just the cycle of life. It is living in line with nature, allowing ourselves to fulfill our promise. When that barley is planted, when the seed is planted, the seed doesn't say to itself, "Oh, wonder what I'm going to be now." It kind of knows, or it doesn't even think. I don't know that barley plants have a process of thought like we do. So it just grows and is. That's all it is. Just barley. It is a barley plant. Doesn't matter who's planted it or why it's there, it just is. And it becomes what it was born to be. So I wonder what it would be like if we all just let go of thought and said, "I'm just going to be what it is that I'm here to be. I'm just going to fulfill my promise. I'm going to come to fruition in my own time in my own way, in my unique way. And it would be wonderful if we could all do that and then let go of all these external forces and thoughts and conditioning that have us moving down a road which doesn't suit us at all and then leads to stress and worries and anxiety. We should just be like the barley blowing in the wind here with the skylarks dipping in and out. Can't hear them just now, but I just saw one fly overhead. And just back there, there was a whole bunch of sparrows sitting on the heads of barley, obviously having a bit of a free feast. And that's life. That's nature. And the sparrows don't think, oh, I wonder what I'm going to be when I grow up. They're just sparrows. So I wonder what it would be like if we all, me included, just been able to say, okay, I'm just me. Here I am. And allow ourselves to develop naturally into what it is that we're truly here to be. To go through the changes of life, the alchemy of life that allows us, enables us to get to that point where we're just pure gold, like the barley's just becoming in the field next to me here. So one thing to do to just help yourself get closer to that way of being is to just sit in silence. Let go of any thoughts. Just sit in silence. It doesn't matter where you are. You can be in the countryside like I am here now, overlooking hills and looking across fields. Or you can just be on your sofa, in your living room, your couch. Wherever you are, just take a few minutes to sit in silence and allow that true essence of you to emerge, to come up from the depths of your being. You are all, we are all incredible human beings if we only allowed ourselves to move through the changes of life, the natural rhythms of life, the alchemy of life, and become who and what we truly are.
I do love the sound of bees going about their busyness, don't you? Just be you and embrace your power of empathy, respect, and conversation. That's the message from today's guest, Ash Beckham. Ash is a speaker, a coach, and an author. Her book is called Step Up, How to Live with Courage and Become an Everyday Leader. And one of her TED Talks is called Coming Out of Your Closet, which is where we started our conversation.
Well, Ash, I watched your TED Talk on, I guess coming out of the closet is what it's about. Any old closet, not just, you know, what everybody thinks of as the closet. I thought it was the most fantastic TED Talk. Tell us a little bit about that and how it came about, because it really was inspiring for me to hear somebody talking about how we all have our own closets that we close the door on and hide behind.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Yeah, it was, it was quite a journey, I think, for me, of getting to the point of being comfortable to talk about that, to try to find some levity in that and some commonality. I feel like so many people, you know, we have these challenges that we face in our life, and we think we're the only person in the world that has gone through them, right? Or we find our community of people that have done it exactly like we have. But I think when you break it down, we're all hiding something, right? We all, there's a part of us. And if we can find that common thread and can connect on kind of that somatic feeling of what it feels like to have anxiety, to have fear that someone we care about will think differently because of us, or they'll make assumptions about us because of X, Y, Z. And it's a survival mechanism, right? We think that the telling the truth, the being our authentic self, is something that is so fraught with risk that not doing it, that being disingenuous to ourselves, making how we perceive other people would be more comfortable at our own discomfort, is something that we do constantly, and everybody does it, right? And so if you know what that feels like, does it really matter what the closet is? I don't think so. I think once we've built trust and connection in that authenticity, then we can connect on those differences. Why, you know, some people, their closet was significantly bigger, scarier, smaller, tighter than mine, but that doesn't make their journey any less valid, right? Because they know that apprehension, I just keep going back to that feeling in the pit of your stomach. And if you've had that feeling, does it matter what it's about? No, we relate on what that feeling is like. How did you get around it? Who did you first tell? How did you start to feel comfortable being honest? Well, who found out that you didn't tell directly, right? Like all of those things, what the basis of it is much less important than the experience of it. And again, if we get to that place of commonality, then we can start to, you know, it's almost like feels like trauma bonding to a certain extent, right? That like we've all been through it, and therefore we can all grow from it. And it's that extension of empathy that you might never know what it's like to tell somebody that you're gay, but you know what it's like to do this other thing. So we've all done that. We've taken that scary leap, or we're about to take that scary leap, or somebody's taken that scary leap to us, right? Those connective fibers are so much deeper than we originally think when we're in that kind of scared, hidden, protective space.
Yeah. And I think that's what I really related to when I watched the TED talk. And you do talk about how, you know, you were very angry. You there was a lot of stuff going on there, and that's actually really not healthy, is it? That's right. The other side to this. And you told a lovely story about a little girl in a restaurant who, will you tell? You tell it.
Oh, thank you. So I worked at a restaurant in Colorado called the Southside Walnut Cafe for years, and it was a diner, and it was just full of these just eclectic, just a bunch of weirdos worked there. And I feel like I can say that because I was one of them. And it wasn't just encouraged. It was the first place I had ever been where the culture was that you were authentic, that you brought your full self. It didn't matter if you wore a tutu to work or had a mohawk, whatever you wanted to do, you know, make sure the coffee's hot and don't drop the plates. Like it was this place. It was amazing and so eclectic. And you assume when you are in a safe space that the people that enter the space are also part of the culture, and to a huge extent they were, but also like any business, you can't control who walks in the doors. Right. And so I would have these interactions with other kids, usually kids between, you know, 3 and 10 years old. And they would say, you know, are you a boy or a girl? And I had a very androgynous appearance. I had a shaved head. You know, I had this very, I was expressing my own individuality. It felt so safe doing that. But I would get these questions from kids, and I would get so angry and frustrated that I knew I was going to have to say something. So in the way that you do for anybody that's been in a service restaurant, or like any job where that camaraderie exists, you know, you sit down and you work through all your personal problems over, like, you know, cups of coffee before it opens, or rolling silverware. And I knew I was going to have to say something. So I had kind of stepped into my power in my self-expression, right? And really was used to, you know, people taking double takes on the street and questioning me and really rattling, I mean, in a very self-important way, I think. I was rattling what people thought and how they gendered people. It was kind of what I was trying to do. And that was my self-expression. But kids, anybody that's had a kid or has known a kid, there is nothing more authentic than a 4-year-old child. Like they will tell you what they think, what they know immediately. And so, you know, this 4-year-old asked me, are you a boy or are you a girl? And I had gotten this question so many times that I was ready, right? So I had all these things I was going to say to her, all these witty retorts. But then you look at her, and this was not, you know, some challenge to a feminist duel. This was just a 4-year-old that wanted, you know, when they ask, are you a boy or a girl, it isn't as loaded as we take it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, is it a spoon or a fork? Is it a chair or a table? They're just categorizing things. It's very natural. Like, I want to know you, and those are the parameters with which I know things. And so I, you know, paused a second and you know, are you a boy or a girl? And I squatted out next door and I said, I know it's confusing. My hair's short and, you know, I wear boys' clothes, but I'm a girl. You know how sometimes you like to wear, she was in a, you know, pink princess dress. Sometimes you like to wear a princess dress. Sometimes you like to wear comfy jammies. Well, I'm more of a comfy jammies kind of girl. Mm-hmm. And this kid looked me square in the eye and said, my favorite pajamas are purple with fish. Can I have a pancake, please? Like, it was just this, the most direct, I get it. Thank you for the answer. And can I get a pancake? Like, it was, yeah. It was such a move on, right? Like, yeah. It was just a answer my question, move on to the next thing. And that authenticity, like, blew my whole world open, that this kid's question was just a question. I felt in so many other parts of my life, specifically with adults, that everything was loaded, that there was judgment, yeah. That there was all this stuff. And in this moment, I realized it was, I could be a resource. And how did I treat her in that moment? I mean, I could have, like, dropped my feminist manifesto on that table, but what is, you know, but then you start to look at, like, what is the next interaction? What happens when there's a kid in her class that has a different gender expression? How do her parents, like, she was obviously not familiar with the fluidity that I was expressing,
yeah,
because of the exposure to her family, because of whatever, but eventually in culture she would, and her first interaction could be positive or negative. And how do I embrace that as a means of connection, as a means for making other people feel comfortable and also staying true to who I was? It changed the way I saw everything.
And I think that's absolutely beautiful. Sometimes we really need just that really genuine child's eye view of what's going on here. Cause yeah, she was just asking the question, and we construct so many things around us, don't we? We build these fortresses around us. And there was your fortress knocked down in one fell swoop by this 4-year-old, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's we take everything with us, right? We carry so much baggage around things like that, that the person in the current present moment, especially if they're a 4-year-old, but in general, doesn't necessarily bring all that baggage with them. So our, you know, we've been hurt, or we've been excluded, or we've been somebody's stereotyped us in a certain way, and we bring that with us, and we assume for self-preservation that that's going to continuously happen. Like, we don't give people the benefit of the doubt because that feels too vulnerable, usually from a very good, you know, for a very good reason.
Yeah.
But then you have these moments where, yes, it is still complex, but you have somebody that can shine a light and say, it's also pretty simple.
Yeah.
Right. And we see the simplicity of it. And what is your level of connection and engagement when you can see the simplicity in it too? And also, someone's questioning doesn't shake your foundation. Like, when you get to the point of being confident in who you are, in your, the way that you're different from other people, when that is something that you truly embrace, somebody else's question no longer becomes a threat. And I think that changes your tact and your ability to approach, your ability to be a resource, your ability to be an ally, right? Because what you think of me does not in any way change or define who I am. I am this person. And if you are willing to lean in and learn, I'm willing to lean in and teach.
I do like that. But right now it's time for us to take a short break. We'll be back with more empowering words from Ash Beckham after these words from our station sponsors.
The station that makes you feel good.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Introducing Anabay Sofas, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices. Every Anabay sofa is modular, allowing you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slide right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today. Sofas start at just $699 with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get early access to Black Friday now. The biggest sale of the year can save you up to 60% off, plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ Stenhouse, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest, Ash Beckham. Before the break, we were hearing some of Ash's thoughts on standing in our power.
There's a power in the way you speak, Ash, and which I think is fantastic. And, you know, it is amazing when you drop those barriers, you know, when you open those closet doors and you come out, literally or metaphorically, you are so empowered.
Mm-hmm.
It's such an empowering thing. And then you can start to live the life that you're meant to live, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so sure. There's so much energy. You know, if we look at energy as a finite resource, which it is, right? And we spend so much time hiding, lying,
yeah,
making sure people don't. And I feel like we can go back to the lying piece, because I feel like that's a pretty significant component in this. But, you know, we're lying, we're hiding, we're doing the mental calculations. What can I say this? Who can I say this in front of? Especially that's the part that's, I feel like, extra challenging, right? Like if I'm 100% in the closet or I'm 100% out, those are numbers that I can understand. But when I'm partially out, that fear of you have your, and I think that's, you know, some people like fling the doors open and come out blazing, right? And other people, you find one person that it's safe to tell, and then a second, and then the third, like it's gradual, and there's no right way or wrong way. But that intermediate time when people might find out, like that fear, that constant fear, you become such an inefficient human, whether that's in the workplace, whether that's in your relationships, whether that's in your connections, right? Yeah. There's so much mental energy that goes into the perception of feeling safe that you lose a genuineness in how you operate every day. Like it's wasted energy and time. And again, I understand why people do it. I did it for years.
Yeah.
It makes sense, but when you can see the different version, or just envision this different version of your life, then you can see that there's a worth. All of a sudden the risk calculation changes slightly, and then it changes to the point where it becomes a tipping point. And I think that's when people do it.
Yes. Yeah, I completely agree. And also getting back to the lying, now secrets and lies, I always say, are hugely toxic. And I've seen how that's worked out in my family life. So there is something really pernicious about the lies that we tell. You know, in my case, I would always say, oh yeah, everything's fine, I'm fine, when I was actually dying inside, you know.
Right.
But
yeah,
you could never allow anybody to know that. So there is something really hugely damaging,
mm-hmm,
in lying and holding these secrets, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it goes two ways, right? Like that kind of like not being able to trust yourself, I think, is the huge part of lie. Like convincing yourself of overriding what you know is true over and over and over again leads to a point where you're not trusting your judgment. You're not trusting your body. Like you're not trusting the signals that are inherent to you. So I think that breach of trust takes a while to repair. Like it's hard to then, after that, settle into who you truly are, because you've been gaslighting yourself for so long and you're just not listening to who you are. And then I think also externally, you know, we come out to people at whatever stage, and I think we don't necessarily understand that there were people in our lives who trusted us, who we lied to keep ourselves safe, mm-hmm, and that they need, there is a betrayal there. And usually people can get over it, but to know that it can be unfair and unkind and a betrayal for me to lie, and I can feel justified in doing it, and those two things can exist. And that person can feel the hurt that comes from not being told the truth, from not feeling like they could be trusted, from not feeling like they could be supportive. Like we need to give people a window when we come out, when they don't have that immediate reaction. It isn't necessarily a reaction to whatever closet we came out of. There is some reaction and hurt that comes from not being told the truth for so long. And we have to be able to give people that space, I think, to process and the room to come back. Like, we've been figuring and doing the mental calculations of being in the closet or coming in the closet for years, decades sometimes. And to think that somebody's just all of a sudden not going to feel everything leading up to that, I think is unfair to the people that we come out to. Like, there's got to be a little bit of, I think that's such a huge piece for me is we have to see that that goes both ways, right? We can't have these expectations of people and not allow them to be these unrealistic human expectations of them to not be able to process their emotions.
Yeah, I think that is huge. And processing your emotions is a massive thing. And you know, it brings me on to what you do now as a coach. So you're helping people, I guess, develop their personal leadership skills and their leadership skills. And, you know, that's all tied up with this. It's all about being authentic. And you've also written a book called Step Up. So tell us a little bit more about your, you know, the coaching work that you do and also the book. Now, if I was, well, I mean, maybe I don't even know that I've got a closet around me. Maybe I don't even know that I'm in a closet. So let's start there. How would you even identify that you're in a closet? Maybe if you're gay and you know that you're gay and you're not telling anybody, that's pretty clear, you know. But let's just say for me, when I was saying to people, oh, yeah, I'm fine, oh, yeah, I'm fine, I wasn't really identifying as being in a closet, although I was, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I think it just taps into authenticity. I mean, I think if you are not being fully authentic, you are in some sort of closet, right?
Right.
And so, and again, fully authentic doesn't mean that I tell every single person, you know, I don't tell every single person on the street every single thing about my life, right? I don't go into my boss and like, you know, I am effectively communicating what I think, what I feel, and what I want. Those are the things that are most important to me. And so if I can't be in touch with those things, that's the first step, is to be in touch with when you're going through that and you're telling people you're fine and you're fine, you're fine. Do you actually think you're fine, or are you aware that you are not fine? Yeah. You know, like, where is the breakdown in that? Yeah. So being aware of where you are mentally, emotionally, and in your desires of what you want moving forward in your gut, right? And then the second step is being able to communicate those effectively to other people. And if you have a block in any of those things, then to me, that's the first sight that there's a closet. There's something that you're either not identifying yourself and willing to engage in and work through, or something that's blocking you from connecting genuinely with other people. Because that's what it's all about. I think it's the two connections. It's the connection with yourself and it's the connection with others, right? And so if that feels amiss for any reason, then I think that's the first indication that you're in a closet. And I think a lot of times, you know, a lot of people I work with are in the corporate world, and that is, you know, very performative of who can I be? Can I, do they want the genuine version of me? Can I provide it? Am I safe to? Is it going to have a negative impact on my career if I am genuinely myself? Or do I fit in these molds that I've seen that don't look like me, that don't identify the way that I do? But that's what success looks like. That's how I've envisioned it. That's how it's been taught to me. So that I must acquiesce to that version of what it means to be a leader. And that's what led to the book, really. And that, where that came from, I would go to these corporate events and association events, and I would speak to people. And the message really was resonated. And people come up to me afterwards and say, oh, Ash, when I have direct reports, I can't wait to implement this strategy. When I manage a budget line of dot, 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 when I have this title, when I have gotten this degree, when I've achieved this, I will self-define as a leader and I can't wait to use your strategies. Wow. But I would be in these rooms and I would say to people, you know, who thinks they're a leader? And depending on the demographics of the audience, you know, it'd be 30 to 50% of people that raise their hand. And then you say, who thinks the person to their right is a leader? And 100 hands would go up, right? Mm. Everybody would raise their hand. So it was a self-perception issue. It wasn't a titles, you know, it wasn't based in titles. It wasn't based in professional achievement. It was based on how you saw yourself. So people are much more willing to see somebody else as a leader in a less traditionally defined way than they are willing to see themselves. Because when they think leadership, especially professionally, it looks a certain way. But when you think of leadership, when you think of people in your community that are leaders, it isn't as rigid. And so the book was written to give people these, to essentially put that idea in writing of no, you can lead right now. And leadership is a journey. It's not like, it's not something you attain. It's not something you hit. It's something you do every day. It's not something that just, you become a leader when you open your laptop and then you stop doing that when it closes. It is less of something you do and more of who you are. And to root that in authenticity allows your leadership style to grow as you grow, right? As you age, as you take in more information. And so looking at things like empathy, individuality, courage, grace, all of the things that are part of that, you know, they often say when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And the idea of the book was to create this toolkit that in certain situations, I need different leadership skills, right?
Yeah.
If I'm having a conversation with my five-year-old about the way he interacts with somebody else at school, that's a completely different leadership asset than if I'm presenting to my entire team this new strategy that we're going to do, right? And so sometimes I need a little bit of empathy. I mean, I would argue almost always.
Ooh,
you need
empathy, yes, always.
Right? But that's a start. But sometimes I need to be courageous. Sometimes I need to be humble. Like mm-hmm. And if I have all of these skills, some of which are natural, some of which I have to work on, I have a whole palette to choose from based on the situation to be the leader that I want to be at any given moment. And again, that isn't something that I attain based on what my email signature is or what my business card says, right? Like it is based on the human that I am. And then that, when it becomes a practice, then that's the thing that we take to the field of the football game, that we take to our church, that we take to any, you know, our place of worship, anywhere that we go, we have the ability to bring that full set of skills. And it's so exemplary and so attainable that it inspires other people to do the same thing. And to me, that's what leadership is.
Agreed. Well, we'll have more on leadership from Ash Beckham in a moment, right after these messages from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Life gets messy. Spills, stains, and kid chaos. But with Anabay, cleaning up is easy. Our sofas are fully machine washable, inside and out, so you never have to stress about messes again. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Get early access to Black Friday pricing right now. Sofas start at just $699. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. With me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest today, Ash Beckham. We were talking about leadership, and I asked her what the eight pillars are that she talks about in her book, Step Up.
So we start with empathy. Empathy to me is the first one. Like if since this is all about connection, our ability to connect to somebody else is absolutely critical in this. So we that's the first place that we start with. And then, you know, and empathy, that's the thing about empathy is it's so attainable. You don't have to agree with someone. You don't have, all you have to do is be willing to see the world from taking a step in their shoes. And again, it doesn't have to change your mind. Like you are rooted in who you are. To be empathetic is different than being sympathetic, right? It is a willingness to see somebody else's human, lived human experience, and for a moment be willing to see it from their perspective. And again, if you don't have to agree with somebody, there is no one you can't be empathetic for, right? Because there's almost not even it's more of a creative endeavor and a willingness than it is an emotional connection, right? And so we see somebody else's experience as different than ours, usually, and that led them to where they are. Even the people that are most, politically completely different than we are, these people are not ignorant. These people are not, like, when we place labels on that or make assumptions about what got them to where they are, we're doing to people exactly what we don't want them to do to us, right? And so how do we really dive in that? And then we talk about individuality, which is huge, right? To make it, to look at ourselves and highlight those differences as strengths, not weaknesses, right? We talked about earlier, getting into the corporate sector and knowing that my individuality is actually something I do put on my resume. Like, I don't hide it, right? It is part of my personal brand, because the more I can embrace that in myself, the more I can embrace that in other people. Then we get into courage, right? And courage is not the absence of fear, but really the ability to feel fear and overcome it, to see that as something that we always want to know exists. To me, it's like, again, it's the pit. I must have a lot of pits in my stomach. I feel like my gastroenterologist would be the first one to say that. But I, to know that, like, that feeling of fear, when I go and do lectures, and I've, done hundreds, if not thousands of them, I always get a feeling in the pit of my stomach. Yeah. And if I don't, I know I'm either, it's not incapacitating anymore. Yeah. Like, I've exposed myself enough. But if I don't have it, I'm either apathetic or arrogant. And those are two things that I never want to be. And so you use that as a check to make sure you're pushing yourself, you're doing the right thing. And then you get into grace, which is that kind of 35,000 foot view of how big, what am I working with? Is it just in this moment? Like, am I having a response, or am I having a reaction? Those are two completely different things. Mm. That ability to kind of zoom out for a little bit and see the bigger picture, to me, that's what grace is. And then you get into humility, which is huge to me, and so key, of knowing we all have something to learn, right? That none of us are the resident expert in anything. And if we see ourselves ever as being at a place of not needing to know more, not needing to get a fuller perspective, not needing to have the advice of other people, is really where we get stuck and we get stale, right? And so, and then we continue through. We move through authenticity, which is kind of the bringing together of all the things of, like, who do I want to be in this moment? And so, again, it's this very bold, bright toolbox that allows us to, almost like a recipe, piece together exactly what we need in a situation to be the leader that we want to be. And to me, that's like the definition of authenticity, of being who you want to be, not who you need to be, not who other people need you to be, but who you want to be true to yourself in the moment. That's what that looks like to me.
That's wonderful. And just going back to humility, humility is also almost an old fashioned concept these days. I think.
Oh my gosh. Right. Yeah, people see that as, it's a weakness, right?
To see that,
but I don't, how is that, it goes, hand in hand with empathy to a certain extent, but to see that there is so much more to learn, to know that my experience, my wealth of knowledge is only through what I expose myself to and what I've lived, right? Mm-hmm. And to think that is all. Like, when you break it down in that way, the audacity of that is not what we would want in any of our leaders. And that, and you're not self-deprecating. That's not what humility is. It's seeing yourself for where you are and seeing the greatness that is around you, even when that greatness looks very different than your greatness. It's much more collaborative. It's knowing that as a leader, I don't need to have all the answers. I just have a willingness to find the solutions collaboratively, right? That is, I feel like that is, at least in the DEI space right now, to think that leaders that have never been exposed to LGBTQ, queer, trans people in the workplace, that they are all of a sudden going to have all the answers of how pronouns should be used, is just an unfair ask of people. But as a leader, my willingness to learn, to dive in, to self-educate, to make mistakes, right? Like that's the humility that we're talking about, is a willingness to grow.
Yeah, I think that's really very important. It is that willingness to grow and having that excitement, knowing that there's all this stuff out there that you don't yet know, right? But it's all there to be discovered.
See, and Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go on.
No, I was going to say, and that taps into some of the other pieces, right, of that responsibility, that we have responsibilities as leaders to always continue to grow. And then when we gain more knowledge, to be able to reach out to people that maybe aren't there, right? That we have a responsibility when you have these two different ways you can do it, right? You can, when somebody's, you're in a meeting and somebody says something, there's kind of two ways to handle it, right? You either call people in or you call them out. Calling them in is that kind of, after the meeting, kind of hand around the shoulder, almost as if they had like broccoli in their teeth, right? The message you want to give somebody is like, hey, you probably want to know this. This might be kind of awkward, but I wanted you to know when you said that, I'm not sure if that's what you meant. Like, it's the most generous interpretation, but this is how it made me feel. This is how it could have made our coworker feel, right? It's this, you would want to, you don't know. And now you know. And then now it's on them to operate differently, right? And then I think there's also this responsibility of calling people out in a certain situation where you're in a meeting and something is said and it needs to be said in the moment. That is not language that we use. Like it is drawing a line of what is acceptable or not acceptable in a workplace organizational culture. And a good leader knows when to do which, right?
Yeah.
When somebody's safety feels so compromised by what is said that it's something that needs to be said in the moment, or is it something, and we all know how we would react to that. We said something inappropriate, we said something wrong, to be called out instantly makes us defensive. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, there's moments where that needs to happen and it doesn't matter what the other person's experience is. But so often and so overlooked, I think, are those call in moments of, essentially, I know you want to be better. I'm trying to give you, but do you want to talk about it? Right. It doesn't even, it's not a patronizing aspect of it. It's that, hey, we are all a work in progress. And so I want to talk about this with you. Right. It's so much more collaborative.
Yes. And then I come back to the toxicity that tends to spread when people are harboring all these issues and then resentments. And if we can just have the courage to lance that boil and say, okay, this is just me. And I do what I do. I am what I am. And the feeling can be quite extraordinary, almost a euphoric feeling, can't it? When you just let yourself go, set yourself free.
And I think that's this huge piece is that we bear this weight of inauthenticity. We don't see it as that. We see it as the fact that we're protecting ourselves. Yeah. But once you say to someone else what the facts are, how you feel, and what you want, your ability to tap into those three things changes everything, right? Because then you're like, we always say, people often say, well, they just don't get me. People just don't understand me. There's a little bit of responsibility. Like, are you giving the full picture? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you have the capacity to actually tell them what it feels like when they say things? Does that feel vulnerable? Absolutely. But again, to take that big backpack, that weighted backpack off and tell somebody else, there is some vulnerability about that, but now they know. Like, we can't expect people to know what it's like if they're not us, to hear microaggressions if they haven't had our lived experience.
Yeah.
And so once they know, then to me, the responsibility is on them. Do I have the capacity and the willingness to be an ally and help them through that journey? I can kind of make that call, but I'm not bearing the weight anymore and the resentment of they should know better. What if we pivot that and say they don't? Should they? Kind of irrelevant. Doesn't really matter.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do they or do they not? Yeah. And if I get in all the shoulds, they should educate themselves. They should read the emails. They should be like, I'm wasting my time. It's just so inefficient, right? Mm-hmm, to be able to have this very basic conversation rooted in, when you say this, it makes me feel blank.
Yeah.
When you respond to an email like this, when an email goes out that are not gender inclusive. Mm. This is how I feel when that happens, right? Mm-hmm. good, bad, indifferent, do something, don't do something, whatever. But now you know how that affects me and you can do, I have nothing else I can do. All of a sudden, the weight is off, right? We have to get through, are they going to be judgmental? How receptive are they going to be? Do we need to work on our delivery? Was it a reaction, not a response? Like, we can play with that all day long, but I've taken the weight off.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's incredibly freeing. And once we start to do that, and that becomes part of how we operate and how we communicate. And again, there's nuance to situations. Am I saying that in a public meeting or am I pulling somebody aside?
Yeah.
Is it a separate email? Like, there's a bunch of ways to navigate that and do it really well and, you know, do it in the beginning. But once we take that pack off, we are very reluctant to put it back on. In the same way that you change it, once you're out of your closet, whatever your closet is, it is really hard to go back in, right? Like, the risk reward calculation has to be so, and that's not to say I haven't been in situations where I'm walking down the street and I drop my wife's hand. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You do the mental calculation
interesting.
A lot.
Yeah.
To be that, and does that make me any less out? No, to me, that makes me safe. But
there you go.
You know, I think you make those calculations, but it is, but I will grab it the moment I feel safe again, because I won't put that pack back on. I won't go back in the closet. I make the calculation of as opposed to, are you okay with me being out? I'm out. If you're not okay with it, then that's kind of, again, it's like putting the onus on other people. When you're authentic and straightforward in that way, then they can make the choice to be around the most genuine version of you that there is. And some people will choose to not be around it, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But so much better for you to not have that internalized toxicity that comes from hiding who you are for the sake of other people. Right. And I love that, like, you're just saying how heavy it is. And then knowing how freeing it is, we don't weight ourselves down again, unless it's an extreme circumstance.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Absolutely. I don't think I know anybody who's let go of any or walked out of a closet like that, who's gone back in. Why would you? The empowerment that comes from that is so great.
Mm-hmm.
And the lack of, the, you know, that anxiety, you know, those gripes in your stomach, you know, and just, oh, and then, you know, the lies and everything else. So toxic and so freeing when you let go of that. And again, it's not, we're not talking here about leadership in terms of the president of the United States or, you know, the king or queen of some kind. And that's not the kind of leadership we're talking about. We're talking about individual leadership, a personal leadership. Leadership that allows us to interact with people on a much more authentic and proactive and healthy basis. Oh, Ash, I have loved talking with you today. I love your energy. You've certainly got a lot of that. Thank goodness that you came out of your closet and you're just putting your real self out there into the world, which is fantastic. I love that. Now, do you work with people one-on-one? Because I'm just thinking, you know, somebody might be listening to this and thinking, yeah, I'd really like to work with this person. I need to just get my act together here. Do you work with people one-on-one?
Yeah, absolutely. I am recently certified in this process called The Dig that really dives into that individual authenticity, finding your purpose.
Lovely.
And making sure all the aspects of your life align with this purpose.
Right.
You usually I work with individuals, high performing teams, but to see professional development as not human development to me just misses the mark, right? Like, we are developing as individuals and we are gaining skill sets and insights into our own authenticity that we take into all aspects of our lives. So yeah, that's the work I do. And I would love to chat with anybody further about that.
Well, I love that. Thank you so much. And it's ashbeckham.com,
that's
your website.
Correct.
Yeah. And there's a whole load of information on there. And you can also buy your book, Step Up, through there, I think. But it's probably available everywhere as normal. Yeah. Companies that we won't mention here. And
right.
Online.
All the ways.
Yep. All the ways. I love it. I love it. And, you know, isolation and anger to openness and connection. I think that's the way to go. So, Ash, thank you so, so much for being with me today. And I'm sure that our listeners will have got a lot out of this. And, you know, if one person's just plucked up the courage to step out of that closet, brilliant. Fantastic work.
Yeah, absolutely. Just do one brave thing today. I mean, I think that that's it, right? We're teaching ourselves to be more accustomed. We're raising our bar. And I feel like the one thing is like everybody says it gets better, it gets better, it gets better. And I refute that. We get stronger.
Yes.
That's what it is, right? Yes. Like we have to take credit for, we get stronger. Hopefully it changes, but it might not change. And so the thing that makes it easier is that we get stronger. The way that we get stronger is to do one hard thing. So I would challenge everybody to do one hard thing today and then see what happens. And again, the trajectory of, I think, stepping your authenticity is it's a graph that goes up and to the right for sure. But if you zoom in on it, there's all these little ups and downs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So absolutely.
Don't let the downs get you down. But I just appreciate you, JJ, and everything you do and the messages you bring to your listeners is just so empowering. So it's an honor to be part of it. Thank you.
Oh, no, thank you so much. And thank you for those kind words. That's beautiful. Thank you.
And on that note, we've come to the end of the show. Authentic expression and the courage to be you are just two of the ingredients in the cauldron of a healthy life. I hope you found Ash as inspiring as I did. Remember, you can listen to our shows on all the main podcast platforms these days, and if you like what you hear, or if they've helped you, do help us spread the word by sharing them. You never know, it might be just what someone you know needs to hear. Also, check out the show I co-host with psychiatrist and coach Dr. Mark Goulston here on UK Health Radio. It's called Hurt Less, Live More, and it's the place for raw, open, uplifting and hopefully enlightening conversations. For even more health information, there's our sister publication, Health Triangle Magazine. That's a monthly magazine and it's full of great features complementing our radio shows. You can subscribe to that online at ukhealthradio.com. Thank you for listening today. Do head over to my website, it's thepracticalalchemist.uk, to find out more about me and how to stay in touch. And then join me for more alchemy here on UK Health Radio and the UK Health Radio podcast next time. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.